We're holding on Tzedek Dalet Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Continuing on this din of blood of a chatos that's splashed on clothing and therefore needs to, and that clothing needs to be washed in the Azara, the Mishnah says, Beged Shiyotza Chutz L'Kloy. Suppose that this piece of clothing, after the blood got on it, was taken outside the Kloyim, outside the Beis HaMikdash, outside the Azara. Nichnas and Machabes of Makom Kodesh, you still have to bring it back in, and you have to wash it in the Makom Kodesh, in the Azara, because the Pasuk insists that it has to be done in the Azara. So that's all. Then you have to just bring it back in. What about Nitma Chutz LaKloyim? What about if while it was outside the Kloyim, outside the Azara, it became Tomei, and you're not supposed to bring Tomei things into the Beis HaMikdash? So then, kodoy, you have to tear it, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, how exactly you tear it, lichnas, and then you bring it in, and you wash it in the holy place in the Azara. The point is that ripping it is going to make it that now it's not Tomei anymore, as we're going to see the details in the Gemara. An interesting point that's brought up is why don't we just say, so toivel it first, and then bring it into the Azara. The Chazanish gives an answer because you have to do the whole process of kibbutz, the whole process of cleansing it in the Azara. Toiveling is not really cleansing it per se, but it is, after all, dipping it in water. And we learned yesterday that dipping cloth in water is considered kibbutz. And therefore, so you can't do any part of it outside the Azara. Therefore, you don't have that alternative. Therefore, the only alternative is to rip it, and then you'll bring it into the Azara. Okay? Similarly, the Mishnah says, Kli Cheres Shiyotza Chutz L'Kloyim. Similarly, a Kli Cheres, whereas we've said a Kli Cheres that was used to cook a chakas in, according to Rashi, this din of Kli Cheres and the next din about Kli Nechoshes applies to all korbanos. According to the Rambam, all of them apply only to chakas. Anyway, so this Kli Cheres we're saying has to be broken, because it absorbed from the korban that you cooked in it. Now, there's quite a bit of discussion among Mephoshim. I mean, we're going to see in the Gemara later on Tzadik Hei on the days that even if you do that, that after all, I mean, it is true, you always have to kasher a Kaili that a korban was cooked in, because otherwise you have a problem with Noiser. And with Klei Cheres, we know you can't kasher that, therefore you have to break it. But there's a special din over here that even, for example, now Midaraisa, you might, if it were just that, then midaraisa, it might not be necessary to do it with all korbanos, because after all, first of all, you don't necessarily. So what if you don't plan to cook in the pot again? What if from now on you plan to use the pot only to store cold foods? So then it might not need breaking. Another possibility, midaraisa, once the pot has been left unused for 24 hours, not the nyoma anymore, then the taste in it is nois and tam lefgam, and on a daraisa level, that's not a problem anymore. So therefore, conceivably, if it were just for that, you could do that, and then you wouldn't need to break it. Nevertheless, there's gzeiras hakasuv that you do need to break these udenware kalim, and that they have to be broken in the azara. So again, according to Rashi, this applies to all korbanos. According to the Rambam, only a chatas. In any case, same idea. So kli cheres shiyotza chutz l'kloyim. If a kli cheres was taken outside the curtains, outside the walls of the Azara, nichnas, you have to bring it back in, b'shoivre, b'machim kadosh, and break it in the holy place in the Azara. By the way, the Gemara elsewhere mentions they would put the pieces in the same place on the floor near the Mizbeach, where they would put the Trumas Hadeshen, and a nest would happen, and it would get swallowed up into the ground, because otherwise the Azara would be littered with pieces of broken earthenware. So a nest would happen, and it would get swallowed up into the ground. Anyway, so the same thing, continues the Mishnah, Nitma Chutz L'Kloyim. What happens if this earthenware keli becomes tomei outside the Azara? And again, you can't bring a tomei keli into the Azara. And here you don't have the option, sprinkle it with parah drumah water and bring it back in. Well, first of all, if it's tumas nes, first of all, sprinkling with parah drumah water is not effective for klei cheres. But second of all, it could be a different kind of tumah. And again, mikveh is not effective for klei cheres either. So the only possibility, noitva, you have to make a hole in it. We'll see in the Gemara what the size of the hole is. The nichnas, the shogar of Mokum Kaddish, then you bring it into the Azara and you break it over there. Again, because then at least on a daraisa level, you made it that now it's not Tomei anymore as a result of the whole. And a third case, klina choshes shiyotze chutz l'koyim, the same thing, the third din, which applies to copper or other metal kalim, that you cook the chatas in, or according to the, or according to Rashi, any carbon. Same thing, the Torah tells us a murak v'shutach v'amoyim, you have to scour and wash it with water. Again, that's not the same thing as kashering it per se. This is a special thing that applies in these kinds of cases. You would have to kasher it as well if you plan to put cholin in it in the future, because otherwise, again, you have the problem of noisel. Anyway, so the same thing. It was taken outside the azara. Nichnas, you bring it back in and work the shirt for makom kaddish, and you scour and wash it in the makom kaddish. Nitma, if it came nitma chutz l'kloyim, if it became tamei outside the azara, same kind of thing. Poichsei, then you poichsei. We'll talk about in a second what poichsei means. The nichnas, and then you break it. Then the point is again that makes it that now it's tom. Now it's not tom anymore. At least on a daraisa level. The nichnas, and then you bring it back in. Umokum v'shoyt for mokum kaddish, and you scour and wash it in the mokum kaddish. So in all three cases, in other words, you do what you can in order not to bring a tomei keli or tomei beged into the azar. You change something and you make a hole or you rip it, as the case may be, in order to avoid bringing the tomei beged into the azara. What does poichse mean? So Rashi explains that it means that you make a large hole in it. So you make a large hole and then it's not the kabel tumah anymore. Tosfos has a long discussion over here. There's a long Tosfos over here that goes through many different details of our sugya. Among other things, Tosfos points out that poichsei may have that Tosfos has some objections to saying that poichsei means to make a large hole in it. Why should a large hole be necessary? So Tosfos gives a different explanation, that it means that you turn the keli inside out. You work on it. It's a metal keli, after all. It can be reshaped. So you reshape it to make the inside, what was the inside, the outside, and vice versa, and that's enough to take away the trumah from it. Okay? So the Gemara starts off, Maski for Ravina. So Ravina starts by asking a question on the first case of our Mishnah, where we're saying that you rip the beged. Kodai, what do you mean you rip it? Beged, Omer Achmana, the Torah says that a beged had the blood splash on it, and that implies that it needs to still be a beged at the time, it still needs to be a beged at the time that you wash it. And now at this point, if you rip it, then it's not considered a beged anymore. The Sfasemis points out that the context of the pasuk where it says beged is talking about when the blood gets on it. But the implication is that since the pasuk continues to say beged, I should use a lot of chabis, and that implies that it has to be when they wash it, it also still has to be a beged. So then the question is, if they rip it, it's not a beged anymore. If you rip it, it's not a beged anymore. The answer is the Meshayo Bekedei Ma'apodes. When he rips it, he doesn't actually rip it in two. What he does is he leaves part of it connected together wide enough to be a scarf. So let's say, for example, the minimum width of a Ma'apodes is, let's say, 3 inches. So now you have the Beged is 7 inches or more wide. So fine, rip 4 inches of it. You still have 3 inches left. That's enough for a Ma'apodes. You could still connect it back together, therefore it's still considered a beged, and especially because a mapodas, a scarf itself, is a useful beged. Nevertheless, most of it has been ripped, and therefore on a daraisa level it's not tome anymore, and now you can bring it into the azara without having a problem of bringing in a beged that's tome. And there's discussion about that. That's, after all, that would imply that there's a difference as far as the definition of a beged, as far as tumah and as far as kibbutz. But that's evidently how it is. So therefore, the din of kibbutz will still apply, but nevertheless, it's not considered tumah anymore. Part of the long tosfos over here is to discuss that point exactly, how it is that it's still not tumah at that point. After all, it's still touching something. The other part that was ripped is still touching the part the whole thing became tome. Even you're going to say the part that was ripped is no longer tome, but it's still touching the part that was tome, and therefore shouldn't that be a problem? And then Tosfos goes on and then discusses various angles on that. In some cases, we actually say that you would need to rip it into a bunch of pieces. You were just saying that you need to rip it part way, but not all the way. And then at that point, it's true. If you were miyached, if you designated it for a different purpose, it could still be makabel tumah. But as long as you didn't do that, then it's not at this point. It's not tumah anymore, and therefore you can bring it in. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? That if you don't rip it through completely, you only rip part way, most of the way, then it's not tumah anymore. V'amar Rav Huna, but Rav Huna says, Lo shonu, when we say a din. The context is saying that a talus or other clothing that became tome, once you rip through most of it, then it's not makabel tumah anymore. But that would indeed only apply if there wasn't kedema apodis left in the unripped part. But if you did leave that amount, it's still considered connected. So Rav Huna is saying, in our case, where the piece of clothing was, let's say, 7 inches wide and 3 inches, let's say, is kedema apodis, Rav Huna says it still is tameh. Only if you whipped to the point where you don't even have kedema apodis. Well, then what is Ravina saying that we should leave kedema apodis, and that's going to work according to what Rav Huna is saying? It's still not going to work. And we're back to the question that we're bringing a tummy piece of clothing into the azara, which we can't do, or we're washing it when it's not a beged anymore, and that won't work either. And the answer is midirabbanan. That's midirabbanan. Rav Huna's din that even if you ripped through most of it, if you left kedema apodis, you might decide not to rip through most of it, and then that's not even going to work. Midaraisa, though, it would work once you rip through most of it. And now, since we have the mitzvah of kibbutz, then you can bring it in, and we don't have to worry any further about that. We don't make this gzeira in that case. Okay. Similarly. We said the same kind of thing with the klicheres, that if it became tome outside the azara, we have to make a hole in it, and then we bring it back in. And again, the question is kli omer rahmana. The Torah says a kli or klicheres asher tevusha vo yishaver, and this is once you make a hole in it, then it's not a keli anymore. What size hole are we talking about? And the answer is shenika b'shodesh cotton. The answer is that the hole is only the size of a small root. And then at that point it's not tome anymore. And therefore you can bring it in. Now here's part of the long discussion in Tosfos over here is that we find other shiurim when it comes to clay cheres. We don't find that when it has a hole, kedei shodesh cotton, the size of a small root is not what you need to make it not tome anymore. For that you have a different thing. You have a much smaller hole called koinus mash. It depends actually. What you have is there are smaller and larger. There's actually a Gemara in Shabbos that mentions that there are 5 different shiurim that are relevant as far as clay cheres, but among them are when you have it's a keli that's meant for liquids, then a hole, even what's called koinus mashkin, is enough to make it that it's not tome anymore. Koinus mashkin would be enough for liquid to get in. If you were to take this clay cheres with this little hole and crack it and put it on and then press it down onto the surface of a liquid, then would the liquid penetrate in through the hole? Then that's called koinus mashkin, and at that point, a kli cheres that's meant for liquids is no longer makabel tumah at that point. And if it's meant for solids, then it's a much larger shear than it's the size of kemotzi zesim, the size where olives would fall out of the container if you put them in it. Either way, there doesn't seem to be anything about shodesh cotton making that's not makabel tumah anymore. So why are we mentioning over here shodesh cotton? There is a din as far as shodesh cotton that at that point if you put seeds in it and water them, they'll be makabel tumah, as opposed to before that they're considered rooted in the ground. Or the other way around, actually, that's once you have a hole in it of that size, then Once you have a hole, once you have a hole of that size in it, then any seeds that you put in it are considered attached to the ground because they will get nourishment from the ground through that hole, and therefore there's the equivalent of planting them in the ground, and even if you water them, they're not moksha, the kabbal children. In any case, we find the size of a small root when it comes to that, but not as far as making it tahor that it's not tahor anymore for that you have, depending on whether it's used for solids or liquids, you have different amounts. So Tosfos discusses that point, and says that maybe we're talking about over here, the Kli Cheres we're talking about over here is used for both solids and liquids, so maybe therefore some Midar Daisa would be Kishorish cotton. Fine, Midar Abonim, you might have larger amounts, but that you need before it's not Tomei anymore, but Midar Daisa, Shorish cotton would be enough, and then that's good enough to bring it in the Azara. Rashi doesn't seem to have the Gyusa Kadesh Shurdish cotton at all. Just Shinikav, that it has a hole, and in that case, that it means a hole of the kind that would be, Rashi says, the Motzi Mashke, the amount that, the Kakonis Mashke really is supposed to be, the amount that we said that if you press it down on liquid, then liquid will enter into it. So without Kishorish cotton, it just means that you're making a tiny hole and a small hole in it, enough for liquid to be able to get in, and at that point, Jardai said it's not Tomei anymore. Jardabonin, it may still be Tomei, but we don't care about that. We're just concerned that at least on a Jardaisa level, it shouldn't be Tomei, and then we can bring it into the Azara and break it like we're supposed to. Okay? The third case of the Mishnah, Klin Choshes Chula, Poshe Chula, of the Chula. So we said that if you have a metal keli that was used to cook the korban, then again you have to scour and wash it in the azara, and if it was taken out of the azara, you have to bring it in, and if it became tomei outside the azara, then we said you have to poichsoi, as we talked about what poichsoi means according to Rashi and also the Rambam, means to make a hole in it, and according to Tosfos it means to turn it inside out. And then you bring it in, then it's not tomei anymore, and then you bring it in and you wash it inside the azara. So again, the question is, Kli Omer Achmana, doesn't the Torah also use the word Kli over here? V'holav Klihu, in the printed Gemara, it just says V'holav Klihu, on the side over here, it brings up the correct gears, it's supposed to be Kli Omer Achmana, the Torah says Sekeli, V'holav Klihu, and again, it's not a Keli once you make a hole. And the answer is Derotzif Mirtzaf, Derotzif Lei Mirtzaf. The answer is, that after you make the hole and you bring it into the azara, then you close up the hole. The rotziflei mirtzaf means to flatten it. So what you do is Rashi explains and the Rambam explains similarly. You take a hammer and start pounding on it in order to flatten out the metal around the hole and close up the hole that way. So in other words, what you do is, so again, you make a hole in the cave large enough to make that now it's not tomei anymore. But now at that point, it's not considered a keli either. Now you bring it into the azara, you bang on it in order to close up the hole by flattening out the metal around it in order to gradually close up the hole. And then once you do, then you have a keli again, and now you can wash it in the azara like you're supposed to. According to Tosfos' explanation, rotzif le mirtzef means to turn it inside out. So then the question is that at that point, it's not considered a keli anymore, and the answer would be, so that's the answer. The Gemara had assumed, so according to Tosfos, rather, the flow of it is, the Gemara had assumed that poichse means to make a hole in it, and the answer is no. Poichse doesn't mean to make a hole, it means to turn it inside out. Well, then turn it inside out, fine, it's still considered a keli, and then there's no problem bringing it into the azara and washing it. Okay, so in all these cases, in short, we're saying that, we have a way of making the thing that it's not Tomei anymore, at least on a Daraisa level, and therefore now we can bring it into the Azara and do what we're supposed to. The Avnei Nezer makes a point, by the way, in some of these cases, we're saying that it's still Tomei Derabanan in the case of the cloth that wasn't ripped all the way through, in the case of the Kli Cheres that has only a small hole in it, and sometimes we know the Chachamim tell us not to do a mitzvah Daraisa where it would infringe on a Din Derabanan. Classic examples are we don't blow shofar on Shabbos and we don't read Megillah on Shabbos, and then we don't take lulav on Shabbos because all the Shema Yavirenu, because you might carry it in Shasarabim, even though, well, in the case of shofar and lulav, those are mitzvahs Daraisa. So why don't we say the same thing over here, that the Chacham don't want you to be over on a Din D'Rabbanan. So the Avnei Nezer draws a distinction. You have this particular piece of clothing over here, or particular keli, has to be brought into the Azarim. As opposed to, let's say, by shofar, there's no specific shofar that you have a mitzvah. You have a mitzvah to heal shofar. So actually the example that he brings is, let's say, for example, the shofar is outside the tchum. And the fact that you don't do it on Shabbos is another matter, but the fact that, let's say, for example, the shofar is outside the tchum, and the Midaraisi, you'll be allowed to get it, but Midarabonin, you can't go outside the tchum. The difference is, so find a different shofar over here. You can't say find a different beged, because the mitzvah is to bring this beged itself in. Next, Omer Resh Lakish. So Resh Lakish says, here's a din as far as this business of bringing in the beged. Me'il shenitma. Suppose that the me'il of the Kohen Gadol got blood of chatas on it, and now it was taken outside the Beis Hamikdash and became tomei. Now you have a problem. With regular clothing, we said you can rip it. But with the me'il, you have a specific mitzvah in the Torah, lo yikorea, as the Gemara is going to quote now, you're not allowed to rip the me'il. So now, if you can't rip it like we do the other begadim, like we do other begadim, and then bring it in. So what do we do? Before we should talk about the question, by the way, is this only about the me'il? The halacha is that other big de kahuna, you're also not allowed to rip either. That anybody who rips any of the other big de kahuna in a destructive way gets malchus, even though the Torah says it specifically only by the veil. So before we talk about a number of possibilities, maybe indeed with the other begodim, the Gemara is not bothered by, because fine, since it's only a problem when you're doing it derech hashchosa, you're doing it in a destructive way, well fine, here you're not doing it for a destructive purpose, you're doing it in order to wash it in the azara, like you're supposed to, so maybe with the other big de kahuna it wouldn't be a problem. On the other hand, the Keren Ora says the Gemara is mentioning the Me'il because that's the one that it says explicitly the mitzvah by. But in fact, the question would be about all the big dekohuna as well. Anyway, so what do you do? You can't rip it. So the Shlokish says, machnisim pochas mishalosh al shalosh, you bring it into the Azara less than three etzbois at a time, as we learned yesterday, a piece of cloth less than 3 by 3 etzbois is not makabel truma. Agos Habach changes it over here to Shlosha al Shlosha, which is the masculine form, which, as we learned yesterday, would refer to Tfachim. The Kehillas Yaakov says, I don't understand what's this doing over here. Why would we think it would be 3 by 3 Tfachim? As we talked about yesterday, maybe this Hagah actually belongs to yesterday's Gemara, where we were talking about a related din as far as when you have a piece of cloth less than 3 by 3 and you think about it, planning to use it for something versus not, where we have the Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, and then Abaya's explanation whether the din of Kibbutz would apply to it or not. So maybe this Hagar belongs over there. Tosfos actually does discuss the point that elsewhere the Gemara says that there's a difference as far as size, as far as the minimum size between clothing of poor people and of rich people, because rich people aren't going to save tiny scraps of cloth, whereas poor people might, even as small as 3 by 3 etzvos. The Me'il is certainly considered big de Ashirim, because as we learned earlier in our Masechta, Ein Anias Makom Ashirus, the Beis Hamikdash is the site of the ultimate riches. So Tosfos discusses that maybe there's a difference between different types of tuma. That may be that only when it comes to tumas midras, so the tuma of a zav, is there a difference between the clothing of aniyim and of ashir, and maybe as far as other kinds of tuma, there's no difference. Anyway, so here what you do is then you bring it in less than 3 etzboros at a time, which therefore it's not considered bringing in a tomei piece of clothing. This is again less than 3 by 3, it's not considered clothing. And then you wash it. So in other words, so obviously if the blood stain was only a small one, you do it then one time and that's enough. If it was larger, you may have to do this again and again until you get the whole thing clean, but you're going to have to do it less than 3 etzboros at a time. Mishum shenema lo yikorea, because the pasuk says about the me'il, you cannot tear it. An interesting point that the Achronim bring up is, so why don't, we've said before about the tomei beged, that we have to rip it and then bring it in. Why don't we do the same thing? Bring in less than 3 tefachim at a time. So the Chof Nosan explains that then we have reason to be concerned that you might bring in more than three by three at a time, three by three or more at a time, and then you're over on bringing a tomei beged to the azara, therefore better rip it to avoid the problem altogether here by the me'il. You don't have that option, so therefore you have the chum have no choice. We can't make a gzera because in case you might bring in as much as three by three, because then you won't be able to wash it at all, so then you have no, so then you have no choice. So that's what you do. You bring it in a little bit at a time and you wash it. Tosfos points out, Udi and Arma Sechta, we discussed the point called Bia B'miktsas. If a person comes in only, if a person who's Tomei comes partway into the Azara, he sticks his finger in or whatever, is that considered coming into the Azara and makes him Chayav Kares or not? But over here, we're talking about bringing in a little bit of a Tomei piece of clothing, the Me'il, at a time. But nevertheless, the point is, Tosfos says, it is physically possible to cut it off, therefore it's not considered as though the whole thing went in, and therefore it's not a problem. However, Moisiv of Adabaava, but of Adabaava asks on Rish Lakish's din, we learn a din in a Mishnah. Generally speaking, as we said, the minimum amount of clothing to become to demim kabel truma is three by three etzbos, but a Mishnah says ha'ovin, clothing that's very thick, rakin, Rashi translates as felt. The Rambam translates it as very, 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 rakin literally means soft, so it means like very insubstantial clothing. The Rambam gives an example. You have, for example, with linen clothing that they made in his times in Egypt, which was made very, very fine. So like gauzy, like. In any case, so such clothing, ein behen mishum sholosh al sholosh. Then the din of sholosh al sholosh doesn't apply to them, because the reason why sholosh al sholosh, why three by three etzvos is mekabel tumah, is because you can use it as a piece of clothing or you can use it as a patch for clothing. But if it's oven or rakin, however, if it's oven, if it's thick cloth or rakin, whether we define that as felt like Rashi or very gauzy clothing like the Rambam. Either way, you can't use them for that kind of purpose. What you could use them for is to sit on, but to sit on, the minimum size is 3x3 tefachim. Now, the me'il was made out of thick cloth. Rashi points out that it was made out of 12 ply, it was woven out of 12 ply threads. So it's thick enough that you should be able to bring more than 3x3 etzboros in at a time, and it wouldn't be a problem. Why is Rish Lakish saying you have to do less than 3x3 at a time? The answer is, agav avien chashivi. It's true. If you were to have an individual piece of cloth cut out from the me'il, then it wouldn't be significant if it's less than 3x3 etzboros, because it's thick. But when you have one, it's attached to its father, to the rest of the beged, then it has chashivus. So now you're not tearing or cutting the me'il because you're not allowed to. Therefore, indeed, a part of it, 3x3 etzbos, would be important enough that because it's tomei, it would be considered bringing the tomei beged into the azara, and therefore the shlokesh says you have to take it in a little bit at a time, less than 3x3, and wash it piecemeal, because otherwise you don't have a way of doing it. Okay. So now the Gemara asks a question. V'haboy shiva samonim. The question is that in order to, the washing of the blood involves using seven samonim, seven chemical agents that are used to remove blood stains. Now, what is this question on? Rashi says the question is going back on the Mishnah. The question is, as we're going to say, that one of the shivas samonim is urine. And as we know from morning korbanos, from the Keturas, ein machnisin mei raglayim ha-mikdash, you're not allowed to bring urine into this mikdash. So then how are we going to be able to do this kibbutz in the Azara in the first place? So according to Rashi, the question is on the Mishnah. The Mishnah is telling us you have to do kibbutz, but how are you going to be able to do that? Tosfos says, in that case, why did the Gemara wait until now? We've been discussing the din of kibbutz for a couple of Mishnayos already. The Gemara should have brought it up earlier. Rather, Tosfos says the question is on Rish Lakish. The Mishnah, you could say, fine. Other begodim, then fine. Now another possibility, other than the Shiva Sassamonim, is something called sapoin. Sapoin is basically the same word as soap in English. They both come from a common Latin or whatever it is root. So the Gemara mentions in other places you can use soap to clean up blood stains as well. The difference is the shivas ha-samarim will remove soap but not dye. Saponin will remove dye as well. The context where this comes up is as follows. The Mishnah in Nidah describes, suppose you have a piece of clothing that has a blood stain on it, and you don't know, or it has a stain on it, you don't know whether that stain is blood, in which case it might be Dam Nidah, depending on the circumstances, or it might just be dye or something else. So you have to use Shiva Sassamonim, you have to use seven reagents on it to one after the other, as we're going to see now in the Gemara, and then if after all of that the stain is still there, then you know it's dye. If not, then it means that it was blood, and if it was blood, then depending on the circumstances, we may have to consider it Dam Nida, and the clothing may be Tomei. And the woman, for that matter, may be Tomei as well. In any case, the point is that, on the other hand, the Gemara mentions there and in some other places, instead, it's possible to use sapo, and it's possible to use soap on it. However, soap, being much harsher, is going to remove dye as well. So according to Tosfos, then, the question is as follows. If it was just a matter of regular begodim, then no problem. Nobody says you have to use the Shiva Sassamonim. Use soap on it. Use sapo on it. It'll remove any dye. Big deal. You still have a mitzvah to do it, so we don't care. But in the case of the me'il, you can't remove the dye from it. The me'il is supposed to be completely tchelas. So then you can't use tzapon on it. Of necessity, you have to use the Shiva Sassamonim, which will remove blood stains but not dye. And now the question is, if the Shlokish is telling us that if the Me'il became Tome, then you have to take it in less than three at a time and do it, or even in general, how are we going to ever do the Me'il if we have to wash it in the Azara, but on the other hand, we can't bring Me'raglayim, which is one of the seven reagents into the Azara. So according to Tosfos, the question is specifically on Rish Lakish's din involving the me'il, not necessarily on other clothing, because with that you could use tzapon. Whereas according to Rashi, the question is in general on the Mishnah how you're supposed to do this. So the question is, well, Shiva Sammanim. The question is that you need the seven chemical agents that are used to remove blood stains. Rashi gives a list over here where the second one on the list is Me'raglayim, is urine. So the question is, how do we do that? The Omer of Nachman, Omer al Bavua, Dam Chatas, Umaris Negoyim, when it comes to blood of Chatas, that's splashed on clothing, and also when it comes to Maris Negoyim, when the Torah tells us that if you have clothing that has Tzaras on it, then you have to wash it and see what happens. So you have a case, the Torah describes, where you have Tzaras on the Beged, and it remained for a whole week, and it hasn't gone away, but it hasn't spread either. And the Torah tells us that you have to wash it and then see what happens. Does it fade? Does it go away? What happens exactly? Or does it stay? So then, the pasuk uses the word v'chibsu, and we talked about previously v'chibsu as it applies to things with tzaras, and then we learned yesterday, and so Rav Nachman says in the name of Rav Bavua, that they also, kibus means to use these seven things, tzrichen shiva samonim, you need these seven chemicals. Vitanya, and we learn in a braisa as far as the Torah, Eloshein Machnisin Me'raglayim Mamikdash, we don't bring urine into the Mikdash. So again, according to Rashi, the question is, in general, any beged that has blood of Chatos on it, how are we supposed to wash it in the Azara? And according to Tosfos, the question is specifically on the Me'il, because with other begadim, you could instead use sapo, and you could instead use soap. In fact, Tosfos points out that Gemara didn't need to ask the question on Rish Lakish. It could have asked it on Rav Bavua's statement that Dam Chatos needs Shiva Samanim, but how does that work if you can't bring Me'raglayim in? So the Gemara continues, V'chitema demadla lehu bahadi Shiva Samanim. You might answer, what you do is you dissolve you mix the urine together with the other Shiva Samanim, or madla lehu lekulu kachad, and then you put them on the beged all at once, and then that would be fine, because then you're not bringing Me'raglayim in alone. Incidentally, it's worth mentioning, when it comes to the Torah, when we say, in machnisin Me'raglayim, the Mishnah says, the Braisa says over there, v'alem Me'raglayim yofin lo, wouldn't Me'raglayim be very good for cleansing the Tzipora, and as we say over there, that instead they use Boris Karshina. And the answer is, there are Mephoshim over there, interestingly, who explain that Me'raglayim there does not actually mean urine at all. It actually means water from a spring called Raglayim. Apparently it was mineral water, and it had cleansing properties. So then the Braisa is asking that they should be using the water from the Raglayim spring to cleanse the Tzipora. And the answer is, you can't bring Me'raglayim, actual urine, into the Beis Mikdash, and therefore we don't even want to bring the water from the spring, because it shares the same name. because it would be disrespectful. In any case, you definitely can't bring urine in, so now you're going to say, fine, you can't bring urine in by itself, but what you do is you mix it with all the other ingredients, and then you apply them to the stain altogether. And that would be fine. The problem with that is, Vatsnan, we learn when in connection with the blood stain that we don't know whether, with stain that we don't know whether it's blood or not, the Mishnah says, Havirun Shaloika Sidron, if he applied the reagents out of order, or he did all seven of them together, then what he did doesn't count for anything, and it doesn't demonstrate if the stain still stays, then it doesn't show that it's dye and not blood. The only way to test whether it's blood or dye is to do them one after the other in the order that it lists them in the Mishnah over there, and then if the stain stays, then we can be sure that it's dye and not blood. So over here, then, by the same token, if Rav Nachman is telling us in the name of Rabbi Ba'avua that you have to do the same kind of thing when it comes to suspected dam nida and sarah and clothing with saras, and over here the dam fatas, then it means you can't do them all together. You have to do them one after the other. How are you bringing the meiraglaim in? So you can answer, okay, so you don't mix it with all of the ingredients. Mix it together with one of the ingredients. Let's say, for example, you could have the second ingredient is called mei gris in shalpul, is saliva produced by chewing split beans. That comes second in the list. Or neser, which is niter, which is a mineral containing nitrogen. That would be the fourth ingredient. So you can mix it with one of those, let's say, because after all, the theory is each time when you're applying the next one, then you have, there's still some of the previous one on there. So therefore, that means, in other words, there's not necessarily an objection to mixing two adjacent ones. You can't mix all seven of them together, or you can't mix them out of order, but you could have, let's say, that the Meir HaGlayim could go together with the one before it or the one after it. So maybe that would work then. And again, that's not a bizoyan to the Bezmek. That's to bring it in that way. The problem is, no. The Mishnah says there that each time you put on one of the Shiva Sassamonim, you have to then rub it. At least you have to rub it three times on the beged. You have to look at Lekiskus, we talked about yesterday, is to take the beged and rub one part of it against the other. So each time you put on the first ingredient, you have to then rub the different parts of the beged together to get it to penetrate. And the same thing the second one, and the same thing the third one. So ultimately, each ingredient has to be put on separately. So you put on the first ingredient and do kiskos three times, the second ingredient kiskos, the third ingredient kiskos, etc. So it comes out, at some point you're gonna have to put on Meir HaGlayim by itself. So what do you do? So what do you do? How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that when it comes to the Bismikdash? So the Gemara answers, Ella the Madlo Luhu Beruik Tofel. Fine. What you can do is you can mix the Meir HaGlayim together with Ruik Tofel, together with saliva from a person who just got up and hasn't spoken yet. The Mishnah describes over there that you have a person has gotten up and not so long ago, and they haven't talked yet, and they haven't done various other things yet. Their saliva is extremely potent. That's called Ruik Tofel, which literally means like tasteless saliva. And that kind of thing is a powerful cleansing agent. Now, the Mishnah describes over there, Rish Lakish describes that Ruik Tofel also has to be mixed in together with each of the other six ingredients. So that's what you do. So you do the Ruik Tofel first by itself, then you do the Mei Grisim Shalpoil, the saliva gotten from chewing split beans, and you mix that first with the Ruik Tofel, and then you apply it. And the same thing when it comes to the urine, then also you do the same thing. So each time you have Ruik Tofel mixed in with it, and therefore it's not a bizoyan to bring it into the Bais HaMikdash. The Rambam, by the way, apparently has a different gusa in Or Gemara and says that you just leave out the Meir HaGlayim altogether when it comes to the Dam Chatas. The Rambam learns that it would mean you would use only six of the ingredients and not seven. Okay. So that's how you do it. Okay. The Mishnah says, Now let's talk about these dinim. Now let's talk about the din of Mariko Shifa, the din that that when you cook the chatas, or according to Rashi, other korbanos as well, in a copper pot or metal pot, then you have to scour and wash it out with water. So the Mishnah says, Echad Shebishalboy, that would apply whether you actually cooked in the pot, the Echad Sheidol Sochar Eseach, or whether you poured boiling liquid of the carbon into that. So you cooked up the carbon in one pot, and now you pour it into this one, then this one also still needs the Mariko Shifa. Echad kodshe kodshim ve'echad kodshim kalim, and that applies whether kodshe kodshim or kodshim kalim, all of them tonin miriko shtifa, all of them require miriko shtifa. Reb Shimon ema kodshim kalim ain't tonin miriko shtifa. Reb Shimon says that kodshim kalim do not. So actually, then I was saying wrongly before. So when it comes to this miriko shtifa, everybody agrees it applies to all korbanos. It's only the breaking of the klei cheres that you have the machlokas Rashi and the Rambam, whether it applies only to chatos or to other korbanos. But this definitely applies to all korbanos. And according to the Tanakhama, all korbanos, and according to Reb Shimon, not to Kodshim Kalim. Now Rashi over here points out, of course Reb Shimon is going to agree that eventually the time for that korban, even kodshim kalim, the maximum you can eat them is 2 days and one night. Eventually, those molecules that got absorbed into the walls of the pot are going to become noser, and then later on, if you cook other food in it, it's going to exude it into the food, and you're going to have a problem. Reb Shimon agrees, says Rashi, that of course you need to do hagolah. You need to boil water in it, like we do when we kash or kalim, in order to do that. All it is Reb Shimon is saying you don't need the special din of Mariko Shtifa, where you have, among other things, that as we're going to learn in the Gemara, tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that it's dafka with water, not with other liquids. So that special din, then Reb Shimon says, does not apply to Kodshim Kalim. But the actual din of kashering it, of course, Reb Shimon is going to agree that you have to kasher it before you use it for any other food. Different mafoshim talk about that maybe there are possibilities, maybe you don't. Again, one possibility is you could leave them until it's nosin tam lefgam, and at least on a daraisa level, that would be fine, you don't need to kasher it. Or maybe the mariko shtifa is only needed if you need to cook, if you're going to cook something else in it, whereas if you plan to use the pot for something else, then maybe you wouldn't need to. So the Tanakhama would say, Xeris HaKosim, you have to do Mariko Shtifa anyway, no matter what type of korban, and Reb Shimon would say only Kodshe Kodshim, for reasons that we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. So the Gemara starts off, Tana Rabbanan, Asher Tevush Alboy, the Pasuk describes that the korban was cooked in a pot, Ainli Elisha Bishalboy. Now that Pasuk, Asher Tevush Alboy, actually is talking about the Klei Cheres. But first we're going to discuss Klei Cheres, and then we're going to get back to eventually to the case of our Mishnah in where we need Mariko Shtifa. So the pasuk is Asher Tevush Al Boy, that it was cooked in it. Ainli Elisha Bishal Boy. So from that you would only know that you actually cooked in it. Ido v'socher iseach minayin. How do we know if you poured boiling hot food into the pot that it's the same din? Therefore, the pasuk says that was cooked in it. It should be broken. And actually, on the side of it here, Shetu Chavetz brings a different gears. Asher boy, that is in it. Whatever the point is, since the pasuk says boy in it, and then it says yishover, it should be broken. Then therefore, we learn it doesn't say. Now Rashi points out, in other words, the Torah could have phrased it the in the kli cheres tevushal. If in a kli cheres it was cooked yishover, then it should be broken. Instead, it says a kli cheres asher tevushal boy in it yishover shall be broken. Therefore, we learn as long as it was absorbed into it yishover, then the din of breaking it still applies. So that's how we learn also this case of Irul Socha Reseach. Tosfos has a long discussion over here about the whole matter of Iruli. When we talk about pouring from one keli into another, is it considered a kli rishon? Is it considered a klisheni? So there's quite a bit of discussion about that among the poskim. It comes up in connection with halachas of chametz on Pesach. It comes up in connection with bosa b'cholov and taruvos. You have a lot of discussion about this question of irui. What exactly is the din when a hot liquid is poured into a pot or over a counter or whatever? What dinim does it have? Is it considered kli rishon or is it considered kli sheni? So as I said, Tosfos has a long discussion about the ins and outs of that. In the end, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that among the cases is that the. When you have irui, so it talks about in Shulchan Aruch that it would be a problem, that it would be considered a kli rishon. Some say that it would be considered a kli sheni, and then that has implications as far as hilchos taruvos and as far as what you would need in that case. One example of this that comes up before Pesach when people kasher their counters is if you just take a boiling pot of water and pour that over the counters, that may not be good enough because then it might be considered kli sheni only, and therefore that's not good enough. What you do is then you have this business where you have a hot stone over there and you pour the water over the hot stone, and therefore it's actually touching the hot stone right before it touches the counter, and therefore that's definitely kli rishon. And therefore, that's good enough for kashin. So the Gemara says, "Boy, Rami Bar Chama." Rami Bar Chama has a question in this connection. We're saying that a kli cheres that a korban was cooked in has to be broken. What about tloy ba'aver tamer? What about if we're not talking about pot? He took a spit with a chatas on it and roasted it in an oven. So the oven, it's an earthenware oven, as they usually were in those times. So it didn't touch it, but the question is, did it absorb anything? So mahu, what would be the din? Would we have to break that oven? Abishul biluahu dekofed rachmana. Do we say that Torah is makbid only when you actually cooked in something and then it absorbed? Here you didn't, because it didn't touch the oven at all. Or maybe the Torah is makbid, even if you have it, it's cooked without actually absorbing, maybe it's considered still maybe we would say that it's still absorbed enough of the korban, since after all it is noiser, and the Torah insists that klei cheres can never be kasher, so therefore maybe it should need to be broken, even though it didn't actually touch the oven. In fact, it's clear the Rami Bar Chama's question is specifically about an earthenware oven. It comes out there's no question about a metal oven, and he's not asking that maybe it should require mirika or shtifa, and the question is, and then in fact the Sfasemes in fact points out a reason to distinguish, but kli cheres, the fact that you have to break it is gzeiros hakosov, so maybe the gzeiros hakosov applies even if it didn't actually absorb. Kli matchas is basically because it absorbed, so then if it didn't absorb, then for sure not. On the other hand, the Chofetz Chaim says that maybe the suffix would be about a metal oven as well. So that's Rami Bar Chama's question. Omar Rava Toshma. So Rava says, let's prove from our Mishnah. Echad shebishul boy, we said whether you cooked in the keli, the echad sheidol l'seicher reseach, or whether you poured boiling hot liquid into it. So we see that even though you didn't cook in it, then it still needs shvir, and it still needs breaking, or in the case of metal kelim, mirika or shtifa. So you see that we don't care whether it was cooked in it or not. But the Gemara says, no, b'lua b'lai bishul like on the vaylon. If it absorbed without cooking in there, then there's no question. Sure, there's no question that becomes noiser, and therefore you have to break it. Rami Bar Chama's question is the other way around. You cooked in it, you roasted the korban in it, but it didn't absorb anything. So, what would be the din? Now do you have to break that oven? So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring another proof. The Amar of Nachman, Amar Rav Bavua, Tana Shom Mikdash Shom Matkas Hoya. The oven that they used in the Beis Mikdash was made out of metal. Now, why would they make it out of metal? The fact is because they're constantly cooking, they're constantly roasting chatoris in there, and if they made it out of earthenware, they'd have to break it all the time and make a new one. So instead, they made it out of metal so that there wouldn't be a problem. The most that maybe it would need mirika or shtifa, but that's easy enough to do. So then that would show that, yes, the answer would be that if you roast the chatas in an earthenware oven, it would have to be broken. And therefore, they avoided that, and therefore, they used a metal oven in the Misanethesh. Because the Sakhadaydach, Bishul, Beloy, Bilua, like Tophid, if you're going to tell me the Torah is not makbid on the case where you cooked it, but it didn't absorb, why make it out of metal? Ne'evet Shocheres, make it out of earthenware, which is what ovens were usually made of back then. Obviously, the reason must be because if it absorbs the one because obviously the reason is because it does absorb from the chatas and would have to be broken, and therefore they made it out of metal to avoid the problem. But the Gemara says that's not a proof. Given the ikka shiorim menochas staff for yosim the tanner, because that same oven in the Misanethesh would have also been was also used to bake the leftovers of the menochas. You have a person who brings a korban mincha. The one way, one type of korban mincha is called minchas solas, is flour, unbaked flour together with oil and levoina, and then they take a koymetz of it, and then the koyanim eat the rest. Now the rest is flour with oil. Then the koyanim will take that flour and oil and knead it and bake it in the oven, in the azara, because they have to eat it in the azara. Now, they are definitely the ikka bishul bilua. Now, there's no question when they bake it in the oven over there, it's being cooked or baked in the oven, and it is absorbing, because the way you made bread in an oven back then was you stuck it to the side, stuck it to the walls of the oven. So therefore, of necessity, then that mincha is going to be, the grill of that mincha is going to be stuck to the side of the oven, and there's no question it's going to be absorbing. Therefore, of din and shal matchas, therefore, of necessity, we have to make the oven out of metal, because if not, then yes, we definitely would have to, if we made it out of earthenware, we definitely would have to break it, because then you'd have the problem of noiser, because then it would absorb from what was stuck to the walls, and it would never, and it could never be kasher, because earthenware can never be kasher. But that doesn't show that if you don't have it touching the walls, namely you're roasting a chatas on a spit, would the same din apply? Not necessarily. In other places, by the way, we'll learn in Menachas, that's the Shem, in a few months, that the oven in the Misanethesh may have been made out of metal for a different reason as well. The Gemara discusses over there the Lechem HaPonim, for example, that does it become Kodesh as soon as it's baked? If it does, then it has to be baked in a Kli Shoreis, because otherwise, all clay Shoreis have to be made out of metal. They can't be made out of earthenware. So that might be a different reason it was made out of metal. But here, the Gemara is not dealing with that. Okay. So the Gemara tells... So at this point we don't really have an answer whether if they put the spit with the chatas in an earthenware oven, would that need to be broken or not? The Gemara is leaving the question open. Well, the Gemara tells a story in this connection involving an oven in which something was baked that creates problems of kashrus. The Gemara says, "Ahu tanura de atchubei tichia." It happened once that there was an oven where they smeared it with fat. They greased it with fat in order to bake bread in it, and then they baked bread in it. Oster rababar ahilai lamechla larifta laolam. Then the bread that they baked in it, rababar ahilai said they're also to eat that bread forever, even if that oven is fired up again. And on the Feyan, we're talking about over here a metal oven. Rabbeinu David, this Gemara is also in Pesachim. Rabbeinu David points out there in Pesachim that this was actually a metal oven, so it could be kasher. Nevertheless, the Rabbi Bar Eli disallowed, even though they're firing up the oven again and again, and eventually any of the fat that it absorbed is going to be exuded the next time they fire it up. Nevertheless, Rabbi Bar Eli asked to eat any bread that's ever baked in that oven, and that means afilu b'milcha. Even to eat the bread with salt, just to eat it parv, because he might come to eat the bread with kutach, which is a dip made with milk, and then that would be a problem of basa b'cholav. So in other words, Rabbi Bar Eli is saying, basically, once this oven absorbed fat from that initial greasing, then it's always any bread baked in it. Any bread baked in it forever is going to be fleshik, and therefore you can, and then you have a din de rabbanan that you can't, you're not allowed to make fleshik bread, and therefore he says that any bread baked in that oven is also. But the Gemara says, Mesi, I have a contradiction on that. A braisa says, Ein loshenes to isa b'cholav, it's true, you're not allowed to knead dough with milk. Vein loshen, if you did, kalapas kolasura, the whole bread is also awesome, neher galaveira, because of the likelihood of an aveira, because a person is not going to realize that this bread is milchik. He's going to think that it's pyre bread, and he's going to end up eating it with fleshik. The Gemara elsewhere, the posts can talk about that there are exceptions to that. If it's a small thing that you can eat in one sitting, then it's not a problem, because you'll eat it in one sitting, and there won't be any of it left over that people will think is parv. The other possibility is if you make it a distinctive shape, then it's also mutter, because then that distinctive shape tells people what it is. You have, let's say, for example, cheese burekas and things like that. They have a very distinctive shape, so nobody's going to think that they're fleishik or parv. Anyway, continue the b'raisa. Kayotzebo, similarly, ein toshen as a tanur ba'alya. You're not allowed to smear an oven with the fat, with the fat tail of a sheep or any other kind of fat like that to grease it. The imtosh, but if he did, kolapas kolasura, all the bread is also, because then you might eat that bread together with milfet. However, ad shiyasek as a tanner, it's only a problem until you fire up the oven. Once the next time you fire up the oven, it will exude any of the fleishik, the fat that it absorbed, and therefore now you don't have a problem anymore. Now in the future, you can bake bread in it, and the bread will be fine, and it'll be parv. Tosfos also deals with one of the things they deal with in this sugya is that isn't it not by nut? The oven absorbed from the fat, and now the fat is going into the bread. This is nois and tam, not by nut, which is mutter. So Tosfos brings that, first of all, in this case, actually, not by nut would be also because the bread is being directly baked in the oven. When it's from Rashi and Cholin, in the Perek over there that deals with the dinim of Bosa B'cholov, then Rashi says that over there. Tosfos gives a different answer. It's not such a problem of absorption. It's more a problem that you may have actual fat on the wall of the oven, and that goes directly into the bread. That's not nois in town. That's actual mamoshes of fat that's in the bread, and therefore that creates a problem. Now again, the Dirabanan, you're not allowed to make milk or four fleishik bread where it's not distinctive, because you might eat it with the other kind. And therefore, so it's also, but not like Rabbi Bar Ali said that the oven is also forever, it's also only until you fire it up again. Tsyupta did Rabbi Bar Ali, so that's a clear contradiction. On Rabbi Bar Ali, Big Moses Tsyupta, you're right, that's a contradiction, and that's it. The halacha is not like him. The halacha is you can't eat bread that was baked that time in the oven after it was greased, but once the oven is fired up again, then it'll be fine for the future. Well, the Gemara brings in this connection, by the way, Since we're mentioning that point, Omelet Ravina Rav Ashi. So Ravina asks Rav Ashi in this connection of the relevance of this as far as a din, as far as Hilchos Pesach, which is why this is Gemara is also in Pesachim. V'chimei achadi tois of Rav Bar Ailai. Given that we've schlugged up Rav Bar Ailai and we've said that an oven that was greased is not a metal oven, that is not also forever, only until the next time you fire it up. Amai Omer Rav, Kederes Pesach Yishovu. Then why does Rav say in the Gemara there in Pesachim that pots that we use to cook chometz all year round have to be broken on Pesach? Why can't you kasher then? Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers, yeah. Rav Muki Lo Lahi B'Shomachmas. Rav would explain, like we just said, that the din about the Rav Bar Ailai's case is talking about a metal oven, as opposed to the pots that Rav is saying you have to break are referring to earthenware pots. Again, you can't kasher earthenware. The boy's name of a tanner shocher. That's another possibility you could answer, even maybe Rabbi Bar Ailai's case, and which we slogged him up, and the braisa that we quoted, maybe is referring even to an earthenware oven. Maybe even then you can't kasher earthenware, but maybe firing it up is enough to get out any of the fat that it absorbed. But the difference is, zeh has seken lebefinim, zeh has seken lebachutz. The difference is an oven you fire up by putting the fire inside of it. So that is very effective in removing anything that it absorbed. The zeh has seken lebachutz, as opposed to a pot. You don't put the fire inside the pot, the fire is on the outside of the pot. So therefore, it doesn't cause it to properly exude and then get rid of the molecules that it absorbed from the inside. So therefore, you have no choice but to break them. Okay, so the Gemara says, v'nevet asokim v'nim. Fine, so let's do just that. Why do we have to break the pot? Let's fire it up on the inside. We'll put coals inside the pot and burn it out that way. The answer is chai salai, or a person is going to have a rachmanas on them, demitabri, because they're likely to be broken. If you put the pot is meant to be used with coals on the outside of it, it was never designed to use with coals and hot and fire on the inside of it. So a person is going to be told, you have to do that to kasher his pot. He's likely to not do it properly because he doesn't want to ruin the keli, and therefore it's not going to do a proper kashering. So yes, in theory, if he were to do that, it might work. But in practice, we can't trust the person to do that. So the Gemara says hilkach. Therefore, we do have a din that we can derive from that. Hai kubya. When you have a kubya, which Rashi describes, it's a keli made out of hollow bricks. So sometimes, as Rashi describes, it's like the kind of thing that you put you use it to bake bread. Sometimes people smear it with grease and then bake bread in it. More usually they would use it to put pots on. So a steak and because it's fired on the outside, then therefore again for Pesach you can't kasher it, because the same problem if you were to say that you need the only way, the only valid way to kasher it would be from the inside, and you can't because you're afraid you're going to break it. So it's also to do that, and therefore you can't kasher it. The Gemara does mention in Pesachim that one, if you fill it up with coals and burn them, then it will actually be kasherable. The difference, because after all, that apparently that kind is not quite as that type is not as fragile as a pot. It's more heavy duty, and therefore it is possible to put coals in it. But if you don't do that, then doing it from the outside is not going to be effective because that's on the outside, and we're saying the only valid way to kasher is from the inside, like the oven.